Hello, we do not own the right to any of the music played on this episode of Two A's That Can Be B's. Thank you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two A's That Can Be B's, hosted by Anita and Angel Lake. On this episode of Two A's That Can Be B's, we will be interviewing Sancho Walker of the Atlanta House Nerds Realtor. We'll be discussing real estate and entrepreneurship, and we hope that you enjoy this episode. Without further ado, here's our interview with Sancho Walker.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm awesome. And you guys?
We are doing good. We are doing good. Well, I know that you haven't met Angelique. You have actually, I saw her name on the text messages. Probably I just know another number, but this is Angelique next to me, who is my partner, and we are partners on Two A's That Can Be B's. Yay. So, this is Sancha Walker.
Hi, Sancha. Nice to meet you virtually.
Likewise. Hi, Angelique.
So, yes, we appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. We know that you have a lot going on, and we really appreciate you taking this time to enlighten us. And we just want to tell the audience our topic today is going to be about entrepreneurship. Yes. And when it comes to real estate, some of us are not sure if you guys, we wanted to bring this to you guys to let you know, you may not be sure if that's something you want to do or if that's something you want to get into. So we found someone that we knew was an expert in that area. Mm-hmm. And we gave, provided a few questions to her to possibly give us a little insight. So help, we could possibly help the audience if they're thinking about pursuing some type of entrepreneurship in the real estate arena. So we're speaking with, again, Sancha Walker from Atlanta House Nerds, which is under Solid Source. So if you are looking for a real estate agent, please reach out to her. She would be ideal. She's excellent. I can attest for that. Her knowledge is impeccable. So let's go ahead and jump into it and get started. So,
all right, Sancha, I'll start us off with the first question. Can you describe, I know I've heard multiple people talk about different areas in real estate. So can you just describe the differences and the benefits of being a real estate agent versus an underwriter versus a broker? Because I know there are different phases if you're a customer, but behind the scenes as entrepreneur and owner, can you just describe those different areas for us?
Sure. I'm going to speak on the underwriter portion of it first because it's a little bit unrelated to the real estate part itself.
Okay.
So the underwriter at the mortgage company, a lot of times we hear, oh, it's the underwriter, it's the underwriter. And the thing about mortgages is that mortgages is a risk-based product. And so the job of an underwriter is to analyze the risk to the investor that's going to be, getting the loan in the long term, or, that's going to get the end product. And there are certain restrictions and, or should I say, guidelines that they have to go by. And keep in mind, these investors or these end product after the loan close, they don't know the buyer up front. They don't know the full situation as to what's going on. They're looking at it specifically as a risk on paper as to how it looks. So the underwriter's job is to make it clear as to what's going on and try to mitigate the risk so that it's a saleable loan.
Oh, okay.
So on that piece, there's sometimes some misconception as to the underwriter, you know, as to what they do and why they're asking for certain things. And trust me, from being an underwriter, I don't want to ask you some of the things that were asked, but I have to, because I have mm-hmm. to make it clear mm-hmm. to the person on the other end who isn't reviewing every piece of document in the file so that they understand what's going on.
Yes.
Right.
Understood.
And so I'm going to switch over to the real estate side now, you know, in terms of just being an agent. And so a lot of individuals, they'll go and they'll take the real estate course and, you know, they pass the exam. And once you pass the exam, you're an agent. You're not affiliated with any board. You'll probably just go with a broker. But once you become affiliated with an actual real estate board, then you become a realtor.
Oh. So
once you are affiliated with that board, you have to subscribe, kind of like, you know, you put your hand up and say, I'm going to follow these specific code of ethics that is set by the board. You know, one of them being, you know, to put your client's interest, their primary interest should be the forefront of pretty much everything you do. No misconceptions, mm-hmm. you know, no inducements, you know, being honest and, you know, and the information that they give you, your clients give you is confidential. You know, on the other side, when you're just an agent, they're not prescribed to that specific board. And so mm-hmm. you always hear with a realtor because of the code of ethics that we there are additional educational levels that a realtor is able to obtain. There are different designations that you are able to get continuing education on to help further your knowledge base, to help those clients, once again, educating yourself so that you can best protect the interests of the client that you wow. represent.
I did and not so, know that. I thought you just went and became a realtor.
And then
you just start working with an agency
or something.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
To be a realtor, you have to be a part of a local board. And that local board then, you know, in the hierarchy of things will then be a part of the National Association of Realtors. And then you look at our contracts, you know, our contracts as a realtor, they are written and governed by the Georgia Association of Realtors versus the agent. Their contract is slightly different. So the verbiage on both is slightly different for each agency.
I see. Okay. Okay. Gotcha. All right.
And so as you go up the chain, I know you asked about brokership. Of course, you have to be either, you know, whichever path you take, whether you're just going to be an agent or a realtor, you have to have certain amount of experience in being in both of those roles. And then you got to do continuing education mm-hmm. and then pass another test and to be able to become a broker, in which at that point, of course, you can go on your own. You need specific licensing, specific insurance to protect your business.
Your
ability, because at that point you can handle money from customers. As an agent, I can't take, as a realtor, I cannot take my client's earnest money and go somewhere.
Mm.
The broker has to have specific privileges in a separate account to hold those kind of monies. They can't just have it just sitting mixing with commission and so forth. So there's certain distinction between what a realtor or an agent can do versus a broker. There's just more responsibility at that level.
Oh, understood. Okay. Well, you cleared up a lot of misconception for me, because I didn't know that was as much in depth. You know, I thought you just decided what you wanted to do and went and taken those, you know, licensing courses, and mm-hmm. you were in the broker side or in the realtor side or what have you. Okay, that's very interesting. Wonderful. Okay, so I will start with the next question then. Given, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic and the times that we're in right now and the social distancing that's required and mask and all of that sort of thing, how has that affected or perhaps not affected, you know, the real estate industry at this time?
You know, across the board, you know, we did see a big drop in terms of transactional stuff back in March, and partly due to the lack of knowledge as to what was going on, you know, mm-hmm. how safe it is to be out there and conducting business.
Right.
So especially when we, you know, we shut down the state in the early part of March, we did have, you know, and not just here, but nationwide there, you know, we did have a decrease in showings.
Okay.
And stores, you know, sellers not knowing what's going on did decide to remove their homes from the market. Some buyers decided not to purchase at that time, just to wait and see, you know, how things unfold.
I see.
But, you know, as time went on, you know, although the numbers were a little bit low in March, you know, when you look at the uptake, you know, in April, we did see that contracts, you know, started picking back up again. And amazingly enough, although, you know, we had such a shortage in March, the prices still went up. Prices across the board, average prices went up about 5%.
Wow.
In April, a little bit, we were still seeing listings close. And, you know, so, and as time goes by, we are starting to see, you know, some increases. I mean, I think in May, we did see some increase in listings. In May, we had about 12,000 listings across the board here in Georgia, which was up 15% from that period last year.
Okay.
So we're starting to see some rebounding back. Of course, it's not where we anticipated it to be, you know, but we are seeing some rebound. I think June numbers showed that we were up again, you know, 1.5% over 2019 in closings. So we're seeing the uptick in it.
Okay.
And I think part of the reason with that is, you know, the interest rates are so low.
Right.
So
right.
We're still having, you know, buyers and sellers try to take advantage of the low interest rates, which, you know, I've been in mortgages prior. I was in mortgages prior to becoming a real estate agent. And, you know, since back in 2000, and the rates back then is nowhere as they are now, you know, in the 2%. In my lifetime, I hadn't seen it.
Wow.
Rates until now.
Wow.
So for me, I'm amazed, because if it was 2% back in 2000 when I started, refinancing those 9 and 10% loans would have been a snap for me.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so even though we do see that, you know, there was some kind of change in how we do business, we still are, you know, having transactions. And in terms of the industry overall, with the social distancing and so forth, you know, some of the things that we started doing more regularly, we were already doing, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we started, you see an increase in virtual open houses, you know, an increase in more online marketing to show the total picture of the home, 360 views.
Oh, okay.
You know,
yeah.
Video,
yeah.
Walk
that probably increased.
Like that.
Yeah.
So that increased tremendously to allow, you know, buyers and even sellers who are selling their home, you know, how they're able to get the transaction done.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we're in this climate where we're social distancing, you know, we have a standard we put out, you know, we put out masks for visitors at our listing properties, or gloves, sanitizers. We've seen a little bit more shoe coverings. We used to do you know, we have in the past done the
so
shoe
they don't bring it in
before,
the house. Yeah.
You know, but you see it more often now, along with, of course, the
okay.
Glove and
that
so
makes
forth.
Sense.
Yeah. And other industries have kind of, other industries kind of shift a little bit as well to help move things along. You know, earlier in the year, you know, there was a temporary, you know, the attorneys got temporary allowance.
Okay.
You know, do some things virtually. We are an attorney state, which means certain documents have to be signed. You know, there was a temporary order that allowed some attorneys to do some things virtually until you know, things got, you know, got better a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, same things with the property inspections. We were having inspectors go out and they would do the inspection and do like little videos for stuff that they see that needed to be addressed. And then once the inspection was done, they'll have an actual virtual meeting with the buyer to go over those things. And so they've adapted
to what needed to be done. Yeah,
exactly, for the safety of everybody.
That's great.
Everybody try to put some things in place to make, you know, because if you think about it, there were already plans that families had prior to COVID that still needed to take place.
Right.
You know, for the homeowner who was moving out of state or had to go do a job or something like that, there had to be somewhere else. You know, those circumstances, they have to be somewhere else.
Right.
You know, so there were certain things that were already in motion when COVID started. So for those buyers, you know, it was difficult, but certain things had to be done.
Right.
Mortgage and a lot of programs, you know, got discontinued and or the ability to get certain programs changed because so many people were, they were displaced with jobs and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the industry tried to find ways to accommodate as many as possible.
Okay.
Given the crisis.
Wow. Well, that's definitely a nice way to hear that they did adapt. And I do see, I knew with those interest rates that sales and interest and would definitely climb, because I know in the area I am, and I've seen quite a few, it was very stagnant out here for a while. And with this going on, I've seen an increase in people, you know, in sales and so forth. So I'm glad to hear that that's happening. Yeah. Okay, so the next question, Angelique.
So, you know, entrepreneurship is always been a big topic now, especially among African Americans. What are your top five tips you would suggest to starting a new business or maybe just another stream of income? Like, for example, do you think being an agent, because it's flexible in time, you can kind of do that as another stream of income, whereas being a broker, maybe a full-time position or underwriter? What are some of your tips, your top five tips for that?
Well, I think for me personally, my best advice would be, you know, I think there are a lot of sometimes misconception that real estate can be very easy because you see the flash and glam. But there's a lot that goes on transactional wise before you get to the end where everybody's happy. So I think for someone who is trying to go into entrepreneurship is to really, you know, you may think you want to be in an area, but to research it fully, to make sure that it aligns with what you think you want to do and what you think you're going to be able to do. A lot of businesses are, you know, tend to fail within the first 2 to 3 years.
Correct.
But to have a plan as to, you know, what does it take to actually do this? You know, is part-time going to yield me the benefits that I want long-term?
Financially and everything, yeah.
And then financially, that was my next step, you know. If I take real estate, for example, you know, your first deal may not close for several, you know, for a few months. Even if you're on the mortgage side, I also originate now myself, and your first deal may not close for 30 to 40 days. So having that reserve to help you is key in some instances.
Yeah, it's not dependable income, like especially if you're coming from working and getting a paycheck every 2 weeks or every week, and you're not getting that consistency.
Yes,
exactly. You know, there's statistic that says, you know, so many agents, so many individuals go out and get real estate license every year, and a good 80% plus of them quit within the first year. Because it's one of those things where you can't survive if you're only, you know, closing one deal every 3-4 months,
right,
building every month. So the startup and what it takes to start that up, I would definitely research and have a plan B and a plan C.
Yes.
Because it doesn't always happen the way you see it in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes doing it part-time may not be the best thing. So if you're not able to do it part-time, a lot of people end up quitting it or, you know, going back. If you're only committing a certain amount of time and that's not, that time isn't sufficient for you to be successful,
mm-hmm.
then you end up quitting it and going back to doing what you normally do. Or if you decide, well, I need to go full-time in order to truly benefit from it, okay, you're still a startup business, so you still may have some rough periods. What do you do? You know, did you have a plan for those rough periods?
Right, right. It, like this, you know, no yeah. one could have predicted this.
Exactly.
No one, yeah. I mean, even those that are closing $1 million homes and things of that sort, they're suffering right now as well. It's not just a particular, you know, income.
Group. Yeah.
It's across the board right now. And no one predicted this. So.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, it's just having, you know, having that mindset of, you know, it is you have to treat it truly as a business. You sometimes can't look at your sidekick as just a sidekick.
Right. Right.
You know, you have to look at it as a sustainable business.
Or it won't survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, so we talk about the researching of it, you know, talking to people who are in the industry that you want to, you know, kind of watch their movements a bit to see what are mm-hmm. they doing to be successful. And for me, really, I find that continuing education is really big. I am my best when I know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Yes. You know, so, you know, that continuing education of it piece of me, I feel is like one of the top things because I don't want to advise a client of something with no knowledge of it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, like I went back to the first part of being a realtor. Mm. I took a code saying that your best interest is at my forefront. So if I have no knowledge, then I can't best lead you.
And not everyone feels that way.
Right.
Because I've over the years met a lot of agents and that's not always their best philosophy. So that's awesome that you even think that way.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the last, you know, we talked about the time commitment that's involved. And then lastly is just taking action.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, you can research and do all the education and do all the planning, but you know, in the end, you got to take that.
You got to execute. Yes, execution. That's why a lot of people don't get. That's where we get stuck. Mm-hmm. Is the execution part?
Execution. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, that's awesome. So, what advice would you give someone looking to start this journey in real estate, especially in this current, you know, economic climate and where we are right now? What advice would you give them?
You know, real estate is one of those things where it's not necessarily sales. You know, I used to hear a lot, you know, that it's a people business. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was one of my stumbling blocks coming out of the gate because I can be quiet at times
mm-hmm.
and I kept a very, very tight knit circle
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know a lot of people. And so when it comes to prospecting and, you know, they call it your sphere of influence, tell everybody what you do,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, get your brand started. You know, people won't use you if they don't know what you do. And so for me, that was one of my stumbling blocks because I kept such a tight circle when it came time to spread my wings. There was nobody to spread it to.
Right, right.
And so, you know, because that, you know, if you don't know where your deals are coming from, then that's going to be part of your stumbling block.
Right, right.
Stepping out the gate. Mm-hmm. Some agents are able to step out the gate and, you know, whoop, they get it. You know, but mm-hmm. some struggle and part of it is, okay, now you have your license. Okay, where are your deals coming from? Mm-hmm. You know, who's going to use you? And often you'll go with, you know, some people go with a big firm, may thinking, hey, I'm going to be getting leads.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lot of them think that.
Mm-hmm. That's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you still got to prove yourself and work hard and show that you're able to. It's just like any other job. You're
right,
not going to go into a job and they're not going to give you their $1 million client off the bat. You know, they're going to give you a starter. to see, you know, until you work your way up. So I think, and it goes back to that planning, you know, mm-hmm. it's just like, you know, if you're going to open a restaurant, I would hope you would open the restaurant that some people that you know will be successful right. and that you're offering the things that people want. And, you know, and you have an actual reach that you're trying to reach. In
terms did you overcome that stumbling block of being quiet and not able to reach people the way you thought, like it's a people business? How did you overcome that?
You know, I went back and looked at pretty much everybody I've met throughout the years being working in different mortgage companies and all the people that we've worked with. And I started with them.
Okay. Okay.
Family members. I put a sign on my car. I talked to people, you know, grocery stores,
okay.
you know, Walmart, wherever, and word them out. Just, you know, make sure that, and it's a continual reinforcement to friends, family. Hey, I do real estate. Don't forget me.
Okay.
And then, you know, I am big on customer service. So,
oh, yeah.
Yes.
You know, definitely once my deals are closed, you know, I want to treat you, my customer, treat you the way
that's
you deserve
important.
To be
treated. Yes.
That's important.
And so I've been able to get referrals from those customers because they're like, you know, Sancha, you know, she cares.
Yeah.
And so that's mm-hmm. my message.
That goes a long way.
Yes.
Yeah. And I found that part of it has been kind to me
mm-hmm.
Because it was never for me, oh, I'm just going to sell you any old house just to get a commission.
No.
Right.
And that comes across with being able to yield me more referrals. And, you know, so that's how we've been able to do. There's some online marketing as well. And, you know, we do some videos and educational stuff
right.
going on. So through those different
channels,
I've, you know, been able to be successful.
Okay.
So how does someone get pre-qualified for a loan in preparing for buying a home or property? I know when I was going through it, man, I had some cleanup to do on my credit. I'm just keeping it honest. So is that part of it, you know, going through the credit? So if you could tell us a little bit about that.
I think uniquely, since I was in the mortgage business prior to becoming an agent and then, you know, subsequently after being in the mortgage business, now being an agent, I try not to take anybody out before
they're pre-qualified.
Pre-qualifying them.
Mm.
It goes back to that customer service thing that I mentioned. I don't want to show you a house that you fall in love with only to turn around and tell you you can't buy it.
Yes.
Wow, that's good.
Good.
You know, so there are preliminary questions I ask up front before even pulling credit, because if I know that the credit is not going to be where we need it to be, we'll probably try a soft pull or something like that and see how we can work on your credit. To get you to a point where you're able to get an actual product and so forth. But I typically start there and then a budget plan, you know, so it's not, the question has always been, you know, what kind of credit do I need to have?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But it's not just the credit, you know, when you're looking at risk-based from a mortgage perspective, it's the credit, the assets, and the income. You know, do you have the ability to pay? Are you willing to pay? And whether or not this is going to be a good investment for you and not put you in a bad position.
Right.
Your livelihood.
Yes.
And so when I sit down with my buyers, especially some of my first time home buyers, it's more of, okay, now we've gotten your credit to that, the level that it needs to be. Have you been budgeting? Because most often your payment's going up.
Right.
Yeah.
So what concessions have
you
made for that increase in,
absolutely.
purchase. So I know some people may say, well, hey, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. It's none of your business. But yeah, it is, because I'm the one putting it into your house. That
okay.
I don't want you to say that, hey, I put you into a house knowing that you couldn't afford it.
Absolutely. Right?
So I always fear that in the back of my head. So I go over it some, you know, mostly with my buyers, say, hey, you know, you need to be thinking about these things as well.
Yeah, that's great.
And, yes.
That is awesome.
So kind of piggybacking off of that. So do you find that sometimes people have unrealistic goals as far as the house that they want to purchase? And once you kind of pull back those layers on the budget, you have to go back and say, no, you may need to find a home that's in this range in order to accommodate your budget. Do you find you're having to do that often with customers or clients?
Yes, because I think when you go online and you do, you know, can I afford a house?
Yeah. Those preliminary numbers, yeah.
Those preliminary numbers, sometimes, you know, you got to read the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times it will tell you, you know, this is with 20% down, you know, is often what you'll see. And so as a buyer, you're thinking, hey, you know, my payment's going to be $1,000 for a $250,000 home because it's 20% down. You didn't read the fine print at the bottom that says with 20% down. And so once you put things in perspective, hey, do you have 20%? Well, no, I only want to put, you know, some buyers aren't even aware of the percentage that they need to put down. And if they are aware of the percentage that they need to put down, they're not aware of the fact that you still have to pay settlement fees.
Right.
Including your loan origination, your title costs, your escrows and stuff like that, which could also be another 3-5% that they weren't budgeting for.
Right. Exactly.
And so, you know, I do sometimes have to pull it back a little bit in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's ways around, and also the area you pick, you know, the taxes, though, those online systems, they're, you know, their algorithm for certain areas, but they are not 100%. Your taxes could be different. You know, they have an algorithm for the insurance, but the insurance amount could be different. So, you know, I sometimes hear buyers will say, hey, it says this particular house, it says my payment's going to be this amount. And I'm thinking, hey, no, it's really going to be.
It may not be
that amount because
right.
you don't know what kind of interest rate you're going to get from your overall credit profile. Mm-hmm. We don't know, you know, what the taxes are. We don't know what the insurance, we don't know those actual figures. Those are just estimates. And you need to be prepared for it could be higher. You know, we would love for it to be lower, but it could also be higher.
Yeah. You know, that's a lot of unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of unknowns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I try to, you know, when I take my buyers out, I try to give them a full picture as to, you know, if you like this house, estimatedly, and I do emphasize estimate based on last year's taxes, because taxes, you know, is always going to be based on the previous tax bill, which would be the year before. So based on these taxes, based on this estimate of insurance, based on this and this, this is what your payment should be.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, when you look at, you fall in love, you know what you're getting.
Exactly.
You fall in love and then you go to get your mortgage and you're like,
man, I'm not ready for that.
Yeah, I don't be able to do that. Make sure that everybody's on page as to, you know, before we get to that point where I'm doing you a disservice.
That's right. I agree with that. True. And that happens so often.
Yes. You get your bubble burst and you fall in love with a house and then you're like, well, you're only pre-qualified for this.
Yes.
I so wanted that house. But you really need to go in there thinking, you know, it could be maybe 10% even more on top of which you're getting a calculation for online to think it's probably going to be higher versus lower.
That's a misconception.
Yeah,
I mean, it could, we all want it to be lower and it could be lower. You know,
just prepare for the worst to get the best.
Well, I don't want to say prepare for the worst.
Yeah,
I just want to say, you know, specifically, you know what it is before you.
And be educated about it, because a lot of people go into it and they're not educated about it, and they get a surprise, unexpected situations, and you know, it makes it a horrible experience for people, because you know, I understand, you know, everyone, you know, is an understanding of what is all involved, but having an agent that is making you aware, educating you along the way, making sure you understand what is going to be required of you, that helps the process.
That
definitely helps the process.
And I, you know, and even with my new my new constructions, you know, you'll see often, you know, when the tax bill comes out, the tax was based on land.
That's how ours were.
You know, there's no house. There was no house there when the tax was assessed, and so when you closed, your tax bill might have been, your payment might have only included $100 for taxes. You know, but I stress to my buyers, I'm like, you know, next year when the property is already there, when the tax assessor comes out and he's attesting the improvement, not just the land, your bill will go up. Your payment will go up.
Mm-hmm.
You got to prepare for that as well. Because a lot, sometimes I hear all the time, buyers are so upset when they see the, how much their payment's going to go up because they didn't know.
Absolutely.
That their payments are going to go up. You know, just a year in, you know, and so I try to make sure that I educate my buyers, and even my sellers sometimes, because sometimes my sellers are buyers, and they haven't purchased something in years, and
they sure do.
Having this conversation, I see that.
Yes, absolutely, big time.
You know, things change, and so you know what was going on when they bought their home is not what's going on now. So it's a, you know, and that goes back, like I said, continuing education on my part to make sure that I can better equip whoever my client is to make proper decisions.
All right. Well, we have come to possibly the last question. But I just wanted to, you know, say, you know, just give an idea of your typical day. I know it's very unpredictable, probably, especially in what you do and what's required each day. But just if you could give us an idea, you know, of your task in a given day, you know, what that may entail.
You know, I have time slots blocked off for certain things. And there are times that I, you know, I switch them around a little bit, you know, so in the mornings, you know, that 8 to 10 period, and maybe that in the evening, maybe that 5 to 6 or so, or 5 to 7. I'm trying to use those times to talk to people, to talk to, you know, follow up with clients, prospecting new clients. Because those are the times they might be driving to work, or they just got into work and they're not yet busy, or so forth. It just seems to sometimes be better time to follow up with customers and clients. And sometimes, like I said, sometimes that change, you know, I have that, you know, that mid morning where 10 to 1, I'm doing office work, you know, sometimes I mail stuff out to prospective buyers if we can't find stuff. So office time where I'm, you know, reviewing marketing ads for different listings, you know, social media posts, updating lists and finding research and properties for buyers, you know, and so forth. So that office time is really, really critical.
Wow.
So if I'm out showing, you know, there's still other things that need to be done. It can't just be showing all the time.
Right.
You know? And then I, as a full-time agent, you know, I'm able to switch things around a bit, but my afternoons, I typically try to keep those open. And even on my weekends for showings and appointments, you know, listing appointments or just showings, you know, because that's the time that, you know, buyers and sellers are available most often, is that evening hours.
Right, right.
You know, after work or on the weekends. So,
okay.
You know, it does change a little bit, but you know, you have to kind of make blocks of times for certain things and hold yourself accountable, because you are a business.
Right.
You know, so you have to, you know, have things set up where you can, you know, meet your milestones, to be successful.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, this has been very enlightening.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I learned so much because, you know, when I bought a home, it was 2003.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
just based on this discussion, it's changed much.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, it's good, like you said, to make sure you're researching, make sure, you know, you do find an agent if you're shopping that cares about what your best interests are and not just trying to get you into something just to, for sake of getting you into
something
because you were approved for it. You know, this has been phenomenal. And then those that are wanting to start a business, just making sure that they do their research and making sure that, you know, they eventually do take action once they have accomplished the research and done everything they can. Step forward on faith.
Exactly.
And do it.
Exactly. And so, Sancha, we want to give you an opportunity to give your information. If there's anyone out there who may want to purchase or home, or if there's anyone out there who may, you know, just want to email you or get information, please provide us with your contact information and your social media information so those can go out and follow you and see exactly what, you know, your Atlanta House Nerds is all about. So please provide us that information and we will definitely appreciate it. So just, you know, give it a shout out and we'll listen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And anybody who is interested in buying or selling a home, you can reach me at 404-654-3595. You can check out our website, www.atlantahousenerds.com. You can check us out on Facebook and Instagram, facebook.atlantahousenerds.com, Instagram/atlantahousenerds.com. And I also mentioned earlier that I also originate loans as well. And my Facebook is, you know, Sancha Walker. Sancha Walker Mortgage. I have a Facebook page for that. And the phone number for that, 404-850-7954, if you need to reach me there. I'd love to help you, you know, I'd love to answer any questions that you have to just to better educate you on the process so you're making the right decision, even if we don't end up with a transaction.
All right.
Sounds good.
That sounds good, Sancha. And we will definitely tag all of that information when we post the podcast as well as when we post the video. Absolutely. So thank you so much again for your wonderful, you know, giving us this wonderful interview and giving us this time. And we appreciate you. Yes, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was a lot of great information that we received from Sancha Walker of the Atlanta House Nerds Realtor. We hope that you enjoyed this episode of Two A's That Can Be B's. Remember, share, subscribe, and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And we ask that everyone out there be safe and God bless. We'll see you next time.
Hello. If you would like to become a sponsor with Two A's That Can Be B's, please contact us at our Gmail account, twoasthatcanbebees@gmail.com. If you have a product or you have a business that you would like to promote and you would like to provide it on a segment of Two A's Can Be B's, again, please contact us at twoasthatcanbebees@gmail.com. Thank you.